Okay, real talk. How many pictures are on your camera roll right now? Enough to induce a little stress? Let's take a deep breath. Friend to friend, I want to tell you what finally worked for me. Chatbooks. They make it so easy to actually do something with all those photos. And right now, they're giving us a podcast exclusive, mind-blowing offer. 12 monthly mini photo books for just $12, plus free shipping. That's a full year of printed memories for less than you'd pay for 1 month of streaming. Sleep better at night knowing your memories are safe. Just pick your photos and the Chatbooks app does the rest. Go to chatbooks.com/get12. That's chatbooks.com/get12 and grab the steal before it's gone.
I had to build a whole leg out of pool noodles and a piece of pork. And then the foot all duct taped together with some blood pumping out of it. It's quite fun.
See, this is why I love this shit.
Yeah.
that's awesome.
Welcome, fellow Leshes. Come on in, pull up a bar stool, and enjoy some cocktails with Dimples and the Beard.
Long story short, you see a squirrel pass out under your tree with a bottle of tequila next to it? Don't assume it's dead. Anyway, welcome back to another episode of Cocktails with Dimples and the Beard.
Tavern's already open because we can't wait to get to this Three Sheeps beer.
I'm going to crack me a Three Sheeps.
Ooh, what are you doing?
Chaos Pattern, Hazy IPA, award winning.
That's another beer's award winning.
Yeah, they are a fantastic brewery located down in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. I really poured that like
ass, but that's all right. Look at it go.
It'll still taste delicious.
That'll be delicious. And while that's settling and you can taste it.
Well, let me say a big thank you to Three Sheeps for supplying us with quite a bit of beer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not just three cans. The rest of it is in the refrigerator. Are you kidding me? And
like a six-pack of each.
Wonderful brewery. Fun place to be. Go hang out there if you're ever in Sheboygan. I almost said Sturgeon Bay. Sheboygan. Yeah. And tell them we said hello.
And they'll get you a big thank you.
They will. Yes, they will say
and they
thank
will serve you.
You
a delicious beer if you tell them you're
if you pay them
that we came showed up for them.
If you pay them for it, they will serve you
beer. They will pay. Yeah, that's good. What do you think of it? Can
I
wait?
Oh, I gotta wait for the head to go down, but I've already had it and I know it's delicious.
All right, well, we're going back. I'm going back to the old pumpkin whiskey again from our Great Lake Distillery, which is a pumpkin mule. So we got
big sponsor
from them. Here's a quick recipe. 1.5 ounces pumpkin whiskey, 4 ounces of ginger beer, lemon wedge, boom. That's a pumpkin mule.
Yeah, I think anybody who drinks cocktails could have got that one, but thanks for the recipe.
I'm going to tell the recipe. It's on their website. Check their website. They have delicious recipes for all their spirits.
I think anybody who drinks knows how to make a mule.
Oh, my God. Trying to be nice.
To who?
Trying to be nice.
To who?
Not the dumb people out there.
Not our listeners, of which we have none. Anyway.
Yeah, I think they need to go. That's very good.
I'm sure it is.
That's delicious.
Let me try this while you do your part.
And give that when we want more recipes, come go subscribe on YouTube. Push that notification bell so you are the first to see when we have new episodes showing up. Check us out on Instagram, Facebook. Subscribe there. Leave a comment on any of those. We appreciate it. If you want to see these pretty faces, then join us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, where all that stuff's played. What do you think of the beer?
It's delicious. I already told you that. Go! It's good. I've had it before.
I understand, but the freshness and the cold. Hey, let's not keep a handsome man waiting.
Like we are, anyway. So without further ado, Carlos Tkach.
T-Catch. He's like, announce me as T-Catch.
T-Catch in the house. How are we doing, Carlos?
Hi, Carlos.
Good. How are you all doing?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. You guys got my name down?
Yeah, I think so. It's I remember when Jarrett said it on the podcast, and I was like, what did he just say? I had to message Jarrett to be like, who are you telling us about? What short? Because we love horror. We love horror.
Love
movies.
Horror. Yes.
And you wrote, directed the short. How? So, Cow. Which I noticed Jarrett is also an executive producer on. So I I realized he was kind of doing a little self-promotion there. He's like, yeah, maybe we should have him on.
Out of all the students, why did he pick Carlo?
Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, no, he didn't ask for that credit, but he did. He was very generous to the Indiegogo, so.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Yeah, we're more than happy to help it. I appreciate that he does recommend people, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now let's get to the history of it. So you are a student.
Yes, I am 39 years old and still a student. Am I allowed to curse on this, by the way?
Absolutely. Okay, fuck yeah, yes.
I'm still a fucking student, and it blows me away that here I am.
Wait a minute. What? We'll just assume you love to learn?
When you say still a student, you haven't been a student since high school now.
No, I dropped out of college when I was like 21 after 3 years and was like, fuck this. Never again. I hate this place. Mm. And then I went and worked a bunch of minimum wage jobs, and I was like, well, this also kind of sucks. And I liked books, and the only book people I know over at school. So I went back to school when I was 20. I got my bachelor's when I was 27. I got my master's when I was 30, and I'll get my PhD next year when I'm 40. So I've taken some time in the meantime to work and to travel and all that kind of stuff.
To climb. We've seen a lot of video and pictures of you climbing.
Yeah, climbing is... I wouldn't say my first love, but I kind of quit doing creative work in my 20s, and climbing filled that void. And now in my late 30s, I'm coming back to creative work all over again. It's kind of a weird circle.
Sure.
Okay. So you said love books.
Yes.
And so the whole time, I guess when you're traveling like you did, you can read books outside. So that's when you didn't stop reading that whole time you were working, did you?
No. And one of the reasons I dropped out of college was because being an English major was kind of ruining books for me. It was just making them into work, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, one of the hard things about being in school now and studying literature is that I can't really read for fun. My brain just won't allow it anymore. I can read comics. That's the thing I've learned recently. I can still read comics for fun.
Jared's got a lot of those to recommend, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's Jared's whole thing. I took his comic book class. That's how I got to know him. Yeah, no, I've been reading. I think I could read since I was 4 or something like that. It just was a thing that came to me. I don't have any agency over that. I didn't decide to be a reader. I just was a reader from a young age.
Yeah.
My mom started giving me, you know, she gave me Lord of the Flies when I was in 4th grade. She started giving me Dickens when I was in the 5th grade. She wonders why I came out a little bit more progressive than she is now.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say that's reading. That's some yeah, involved reading.
Yeah, but I was also reading Goosebumps. I was reading Hank the Cowdog. I was reading Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys. Quite a lot.
Oh yeah, now you're talking my speed. That's what I read when I was younger. I'm a little bit older than you, just a few years. But so in that reading, did you read a lot of horror? And I guess I'm just trying to get to why writing your first short movie, you picked horror as opposed to something else.
Yeah, I mean, so my first, I was thinking about this as I was kind of prepping for this, or like just thinking about it all day today. My first real engagement with horror in a narrative form were the Goosebumps stories, R.L. Stein.
Okay, sure.
I just like ate those fucking things like candy when I was in the 4th grade. I remember it was 3rd and 4th grade because I lived in L.A. at the time, and I moved to Bakersfield, California in the 4th grade. And I just ate those like crazy. And then in the 6th grade, I started writing short stories, and I wrote this short slasher story that involved a bunch of my fellow students, and they all died, and I'm pretty sure that would have gotten me in like a huge amount of trouble these days.
I was just thinking that. I was like, wait, did this get you at least sent to the principal, I would imagine?
I don't remember. I just remember my friends liked it. My mom...
Did you hand it in for a class?
No, it just got passed around students.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
So maybe they never found it. Maybe they ignored it. I don't know. And then my first like cinematic involvement with horror was Misery. My mom rented me the movie Misery when I was like 12 years old, which is like an insane thing to do.
Yeah,
for a 12-year-old. And I was hooked on horror ever since. I just have always kind of loved horror. I used to make short films when I was in my late teens and early 20s, and they were all short slasher films.
Cool.
So when I decided that I wanted to kind of like rise from the dead, this old goal of making some short films, horror seemed like the natural thing. It's cheap, it's effective, it has a built-in audience. It's so much, I can't express enough how much fun it is to just do stuff with the blood and guts all the time. There's like gore, we're just laughing the whole time. It's kind of a
right?
I don't know what it is that's so fun about it. So it just seemed like a natural fit. My cinematographer, who's one of my best friends, who made Cal look as good as it does, he was not a horror fan prior to this. And I had to kind of drag him into it. And it was very funny to see him orient himself around. But I mean, it's a very dramatic storytelling format visually. So he had a lot of fun with that. And now he's getting more into horror. But it was
that's
quite
awesome.
Entertaining to try to explain to him, you know, why I am attacked to horror so much.
Yeah, I think that I find it a common element when we talk to people who are horror fans. A lot of people that got into horror did get into it at a young age. You don't run into a lot of people who started watching horror in their 20s and really love it. Like, I have a 10-year-old daughter who I'm slowly trying to, like, I know the push has to start to happen now. Like, I watched Nightmare on Elm Street the first time when I was 8 because I had an older sister. So, I'm like, now's about the time.
Yeah.
Goosebumps really is a great introduction.
Right. That's what
it really is.
So good. I mean, I can't wait to go back and reread some of those. It's been, I don't know, 30 years probably since I read.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny with horror because, like, you know, my mom rented me Misery, which has got violence. It's got terror. It's got psychological horror. My mom was renting me all sorts of stuff. She bought me Pulp Fiction when I was 16 years old. But at the same time, I wasn't allowed to watch anything with sex. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I could watch Demolition Man. People get exploded.
Right?
But nothing with sex was allowed. It's such a funny way to grow up.
Yeah.
But be honest, when she went to bed, you tried to find some movies with sex in it. Like, boys do.
I was in middle school when the internet became a thing. So, I have my own other traumas to work with through on that one.
All right.
Yeah.
Downloading slow. We used to have a scramble and watch for.
Right? Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah. On the old cable box, trying to get it just right. Yeah.
Glued them in the back. So going back to the guts, who was your special effects guts guy on this, on the movie? Was that you?
So I did a lot of the special effects myself. In part of the film, too, I had to act as Cal. So I'm actually in the costume for part of because we had some scheduling conflicts when we had to do a reshoot. We had some weather issues on principal photography where our last 3 hours of the shoot just got blasted with like 60-mile-an-hour wind gusts. And
couldn't
do any of the effects we wanted. Blood was spraying all over the crew. It was gross. So we had to go back. I traveled to South Africa every summer. So we finished shooting like 2 weeks later. I went to South Africa and then we had a plan to shoot again in November. So there's a big gap in the middle of that finale scene.
Right.
Wow. Okay.
And I had to like buy a 4-foot fan to simulate all the wind again in order to get that continuity, which was quite a bit of fun. But we also had a local woman named Stacia Gorsuch who made a lot of the blood effects in the scene where Emma's character, Sam, gets her face put in the guts. That's not actually, there's nobody there. That's a body double that she made for us that has a cavity in it.
But how did Emma like that?
I mean, she never once complained. I think her face was red for 3 days. I heard this from hand. I tried to find the blood that would stain the least, but she never complained. We did it more than once. She's such a trooper. I mean, she was
telling people she was sunburned for a while.
Sunburned in November. I guess in Vegas you can do that.
Yeah, right.
That's true. Yeah.
So it was. I mean, that stuff was so much fun. And then like the guts I bought on Etsy. You know, Etsy's a really great resource for this type of stuff. I mean, I like this right here. I brought this for you guys to show you guys. This is the foot that appears when Emma's character gets stabbed in the calf. That wasn't her foot. And this is off of Amazon. This is for like people who, I mean, I'm sure it's for foot fetish people too, but it's for people who want to practice the nails, right? Like nail stuff. And it has like insane detail. It's gross.
That is a lot of detail. Yeah. That scene with that. What is that? The tool, the murder tool.
Oh, it's called a hand scythe.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
Oh, so yeah, just like a mini one.
Yeah, yeah. They're used for a different form of agriculture. I think that one was, I bought it off Etsy. It comes from a junkyard. I think it's like 50 years old. I gave it to one of the Indiegogo people.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Yeah. But yeah, that made me really cringe up when in the back of the leg. Wow.
Yeah.
That was a good spot.
We would have loved for it to be gorier and more effective, but I'm glad it got the cringe factor. That's kind of what you want, but you know, it's a low budget horror film. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. It's always nice when you can Yeah, you hit a spot like that where, like you're saying, like where you know everybody is like that sees it is like, oh, that's gotta hurt. That's a bit.
Yeah, you don't think of that, right?
My ideal version of that scene was way worse, we got it to work. I had to build a whole leg out of pool noodles and a piece of pork, and then the foot all duct taped together with some blood pumping out of it. It's quite fun.
See, this is why I love this shit.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Those stories are what make us keep wanting to have new horror people on because right. of the stories like that.
But that's what's cool about, we love horror movies, and we love how the indie low budget horror movies have had this resurgence. And it is so cool to hear how you guys make your stuff work, and where there's a will, there's a way. And it's crazy. Some of the things that we've heard that have been done for right. movies, yeah. like how they did them. So,
I mean, for that particular effect, we shot the night before and we were out shooting until like 1, 2 or 3 in the morning. And then got home and I just could not sleep. I was so nervous because this is my first production. We had like 16 people on set every day. So it was like a medium sized production for me. And so that morning, like at 5 in the morning, I went to Home Depot and started gathering stuff. And I reworked the entire effect before going back out that night at like 8 o'clock at night. So it was very like last minute, making sure it worked, just so anxious to get something decent out of it.
Right.
It wasn't working at first at all. And then suddenly it worked. We got kind of lucky.
Well, that's perfect. Yeah. Well, I mean,
you want it to be believable, right?
Yeah.
And that's the goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Believable enough.
Right. Right. So because of the killing device and the murder, your horror guy, so important, right? I mean, if you don't pick a good one, mm-hmm. you're going to lose the audience. So yeah. What made you come up with the look of your killer? Okay.
So this is funny because it was a complete accident. you don't want perfect to be the enemy of good. My buddy and I had been talking about making a film since 2020. And every idea I had, I'm the writer, he's this visual guy, right? Every idea I had was just like too ambitious. Space elevators or buildings on fire or whatever, That's just the way it goes. I'm like a sci-fi fan and I like to go big. And so finally,
is a space elevator an elevator that goes to space? Is that...
yes, that's okay. The original short film I wrote had a space elevator, but it wasn't horror. It was eco-terrorist sci-fi. That's a different story. and so I finally sat down and wrote this screenplay that I thought was quite good and I thought would play really well with the horror community, right? And it involved like a pretty serious twist. And so I wanted the title and things to be misdirecting the audience, right? Like the twist was really important. And so I was just looking around online at masks and I actually found this. This is the original mask for Cal.
Oh, wow.
No, okay.
Yeah. It's not bad, right? It's funny. It's kind of goofy, kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Moves. But this worked perfect as misdirection, right? So the working title of this original short film was just Cal, based on this slasher Cal. And then there's a twist at the end that makes you rethink the whole thing, right? But kind of last minute, we decided to pivot to something different. But I had already done all this work with Cal. I'd already bought this other mask, the one that shows up in the thing. So I was like, fuck it. We're going to stick with Cal and we're going to move this into a van life eco horror.
Okay.
That was quite an easy thing to do because I lived in a van outdoors. I lived outdoors 5 years, my wife and I. My cinematographer lived 2 years or 3 years in a van. So we were well versed with this lifestyle. We really knew how scary it could be. And I'm interested in, Stephen Graham Jones, kind of environmentally concerned horror. And the cow skull is a perfect image for that type of thing, right? Because it
sure.
has such right. strong ties to industrial agriculture. Same with the hand scythe, right? The hand scythe is used for industrial agriculture as well.
Yeah.
And so the symbolism just kind of fell into my lap there, especially when you have a group of characters who spend all their time outdoors, but really they're dragging as much of civilization to the outdoors as they possibly can, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of the stuff I was thinking about as I was rewriting this script frantically as we were approaching
last minute
production day. Yeah.
Are you rewriting as you're shooting practically?
I mean, the original script had Cal jumping in the van and running over somebody. And like two days before we shot, we went to test the effect and we're like, that's not going to fucking work. Like, that looks terrible. There's just no chance. So like literally the day before shooting, we're rewriting the ending. And then when we did reshoots while I was gone for the summer, I rewrote the ending. The whole face and the guts thing was not in the original script at all. That was me just being like, okay, we got to reshoot. How can I be as maximalist as possible? Get the maximum gross factor, but also something that's thematically, I think, kind of on point, right? He's kind of putting Sam's face in her own mess to a degree, right? And so, I'm so surprised at the end result, which is wonderful. If it came out exactly how I imagined, how boring would that be?
Right.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
That's true. Was the mask you showed us, is that what was used when Sam looked in the distance? At the glowing eyes cow?
No. In the distance is a composite of a coyote. At the very end you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, glowing eyes.
Yeah. That's a coyote if you have a bright enough screen. It's pretty dark, but we wanted to keep it dark.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're talking about this and it's right now it's like people can't go watch this on YouTube. It's out on the film festival circuit. So I don't know how much you want to give away.
Right.
We were talking about that before and talking about whether it was supposed to be a cow. And I thought when I said, I'm like, I think it looks like a wolf.
Yeah,
that's what it.
And I'm wondering,
it does, but
like it, to me, the four characters around Sam.
Yeah.
Like all seem to be wearing different masks from different animals.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I was wondering, like, is this her animal that's watching her at the end?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. They will eventually come out on YouTube. I just have to wait until I get more rejections. That's how it goes. and then if people want to like stop listening or skip ahead on some spoilers. Yeah, I call them the Animal Council. I think one of my instincts in storytelling, which in the short form actually I think is a bad instinct in some ways, but I just can't help myself, so it's too bad, is to I want to hint at a broader world, right? You have these hints about their relationship. You have these hints about this other person that she's having an emotional affair with. You have these hints about the state of the world with the gas shortages and all this type of stuff, right? And you have these hints about it's not a lone attack. There's some sort of group there, right? And there's some sort of reason they don't kill her. They take her instead. And I have like 70 pages of a feature version written where you get a lot more explanation out of this. Not enough to satisfy anybody, but I like keeping things vague.
But is that not the
goal? Just make it into a full feature where you can expand on all this?
If somebody wants to give me the money, I will make it tomorrow. But I would love to do that. But I'm also working on a few other scripts that I think maybe are more marketable. And I think might work a little bit better. So Cal might get thrown back. Although I feel like a van life horror film has quite a lot of cultural credence quite suddenly, right? And who knows how long it'll last.
The killer, I mean, being these people in these masks is just, I mean, it's a frightening look, like the scene where you all of a sudden can see all four of them as they come up from behind him. It's a frightening concept. And so you take that and they're out in the desert where these people are van. I mean, it makes for a good scary movie.
Yeah. So I'm not writing that one off, but I got to like finish my dissertation first and stuff. and get a job
PhD and stuff.
I got shit to do.
Presumably, I got to get a job. Presumably.
No, you're talking to two guys who barely made it out of high school, so we don't know what PhDs look like. But
no.
Well, at this point, I'm pretty sick of my PhD. I love it. I love literature. I love literature analysis. But 5 years in school was the longest stint of school I've had, other than like elementary and high school and stuff. So I'm ready to have some time to myself.
Yeah.
Well, going back to your living outside for 5 years with your wife, you didn't have much alone time there, but what made you do that?
No.
Live outside for 5 years.
So, it was another accident. My life is full of these things, I guess.
Bob Ross, happy accidents?
Yeah, the happy accidents. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Bob Ross is a perfect example. I love Bob Ross. So I went back for my master's program after I started climbing. Climbing kind of came into my life at a time when I was partying a lot. I was doing a lot of drugs, the fun drugs. I took pop culture's message really seriously. The fun stops at psychedelics. We all know this.
Exactly.
Right? I had friends who were doing cocaine and other stuff. And I was like, you guys, we watched the same movies. What? I don't understand.
This never ends well.
I've seen Scarface. I know the story. And so
stick to the drugs that make people happy.
Yeah. But, you know, I grew up in Bakersfield. Bakersfield, you know, we were partying a lot. We were getting into trouble. It wasn't good. And then I started climbing, and suddenly I had something that just invigorated my energies, got me outdoors, made me really want to be better at something. I was quite bad at climbing when I started. And so I went back to school partially just to have more stability so I could climb more, right?
Okay.
I also had like a pretty important mushroom trip on my 25th birthday where I was like, hey, you got to quit being an asshole, Carlos, and go do something. Like, go back to school. It's fine. And so it was a good one. And so
hopefully you weren't climbing when you were on your mushroom trip. No.
We had climbed the day before. Yeah. I literally like came down from the mountain, quit my job, broke up with the girl I had been dating for like a year, and registered for college that week. I think my parents were extremely confused. So fast forward to me getting my master's. Okay. There's a place called Bishop, California. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world. It's on the eastern side of the Sierra Nevadas. It's okay. Just epic. It's gorgeous. And there's world-class climbing there. I learned to climb about 4 hours from there. So while I was learning to climb, while I was in school, I was going there a lot. And I had a friend who lived there. There's a community college there, really small community college, like 150 students on the ground. It's a sister campus to a larger one down south that serves rural areas with these satellite campuses. And so I was like, I want a job there. So as soon as I graduated, I called them and I was like, hey, I want a job. And they were like, well, we can give you one class and it's $800 a month, which is not enough to live in this small mountain town. So my dad and I bought a van, and my dad's a carpenter. He helped me build out this van. And this was just supposed to be like a stopgap. I'll live in the van during the fall months when it's beautiful up there and it's easy. Van life is common in climbing, so it wasn't that big of a deal. I had done some longer trips in a minivan before. But after 2 or 3 months of not paying rent, of having a lot of free time, I mean, they gave me another class so I could have afforded rent. I was like, fuck it. Like, I'm just going to stay doing this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Around that time, I met my now wife. She was working in Yosemite. But I met her in the climbing gym in Mammoth Lakes, and I showed her my van.
I don't mean to stop you. How do you pick up a lady and say, you want to come back to my van?
a very special lady. A very special lady. Yeah.
She's like, no, let's go to my van.
It was 10 in the morning. I showed her my van, and then we went and got a beer, and I had to teach that night. So she was, immediately a special one.
Nice. Obviously. Yeah. Congratulations.
She ended up becoming a substitute teacher in the area, getting her own van. And so then we had two vans that we would park next to each other for like a year.
You're living in a double wide.
First time I've ever heard of that, but that's perfect.
Did you park them so that the doors so you could go just back and forth between them?
Yeah, just like that. Yeah, I would wake up early in the morning and to read and go in my van so I wouldn't wake her up. She slices
nice.
Van. Yeah, so we ended up buying an 18-foot trailer, but it was a summer trailer. It didn't have a bathroom. It didn't have a working fridge. It barely had electricity, had a stove. And, you know, if it was 8 degrees outside, which it would get to be 8 degrees outside in Bishop, California in the winters, would be like 12 degrees inside there. So we were roughing it even in this trailer. And yeah, we just saw no reason to stop until we moved to Vegas for school.
Wow.
We loved
obviously
it.
5 years is a long time.
We loved it.
That has to be a big change then when you move into an apartment or whatever when you go to Vegas, like being strapped down to something now. How did you adjust to that?
I mean, you know, 5 years is a long time. We loved it. I learned a lot. I kind of think of it as like my Walden in the Woods moment, right? It's like if I had to pee in the middle of the night and it was a blizzard outside, well, guess what? I had to go pee in the blizzard. So it's like, you know, the most mundane parts of your day become some of the most exciting parts of your day because they're so difficult, right? It really like wakes your brain up. I really enjoyed it, but also it's not legal. There's that. If you want to start a family or something, it's not exactly a way to do that. We were kind of stuck in our jobs there. There was no room for advancement. I'm not really a person who thinks in terms of career too much, but I didn't want to be teaching the same course for the next 25 years, you know?
Sure.
And so it just came time to make a move and do something. Vegas was an obvious place to go to because the climbing's good, her family's here, and this is a really good English program. But you can't do the van life thing in Vegas, otherwise we would have tried. It's just no good here.
Sure.
So, you know, it I thought it was going to be a harder adjustment, but because we were doing it because we wanted to, not because we had to, it didn't feel that bad, you know?
Okay. I'm curious, though, the scene in Kyle where he has to go out to take a pee in the middle of the night, did that come from, like, one of your nights? Did you get freaked out one night taking a pee in the middle of the night?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's nice. Terrifying. And, you know, you're in places with bears. One time we woke up and we're pretty sure a bear was crawling all over the top of our van because we were in Tahoe and they have these small kind of like medium-sized black bears, right? So it was like whatever it was that was shaking the van was too big to be a raccoon, and the next thing up is a bear out there.
Yeah.
We spent some time in the South. We were on the road one year, and, you know, I'm from California. I have certain unfair biases about the South. I understand that. But you go out to pee in the middle of the night, and you know that everybody within 100 miles has a gun. It gets a little worrisome.
Right? Yeah. You want to walk a little too far to take a pee, and you get shot.
You can't pee there. Boom.
Right?
Yeah. And, you know.
Well, and that was played off very well in the movie where, you know, sounds where you are outside, or the male character was outside peeing, and then you didn't see that. You saw her view, and her listening to different sounds, and you screaming again. You, I just envision it was you.
Yeah,
that was kind of the story came from. So that was really well done with hearing the noises.
Thank you.
So that happened.
That was
numerous times.
You know, the main character there, Kyle, that's played by Daniel Bateman. He's a wonderful actor that we just got so lucky. I don't know how we got lucky enough to get him, because he was like just coming off a feature length film that was shot in Italy. It's like a queer coming of age romance. It's quite good. Then he was waiting for that to premiere. And since it's premiered, he's gotten a lot more work, and I don't think we would have gotten him. So he was just looking for something in the meantime that interested him. He had never done horror before. And the sound design there was done by a colleague's husband, Travis Olson. He works for a Marvel TV show. And I think my colleague kind of made him do it because he's my colleague. And then he has since, I think he really enjoyed it because he's working on our next film. We're in pre-production for our next film now. But the sound and horror is so important. So having somebody and, you know, we had a really difficult time with the sound because we were shooting outdoors in the wind. During that gas station scene, they wouldn't turn the music off for us. So there was music blaring in the gas station the whole time. Boulder Highway right there. I was putting my sound guys through a mess, unfortunately, but they pulled it off, I think.
Yeah. Guys who are good at that kind of stuff amaze me, because even trying to just edit a podcast, I'm like, I've been trying to get a little more creative now with like thumbnails and picture, you know, trying to picture edit and audio edit and stuff. And I'm like, you need a master's degree to do this stuff. Like the people that are good at it are amazing.
Yeah, and I don't know anything about it. I was just like, all right, guys, whatever you do, and I hope for the best. And they provided.
That's awesome.
Well, and I think what you just said, right? We found that a lot too in this horror indie scene in Vegas. We've had some people on from there. Yeah. Is you work with the same crew because you know what they can do for you, actors and things like that. They know you know what they bring to the table. So what is? Can you say the next project you're working on at all, or anything about it?
Yeah, so I've got a couple of small projects that I'm working on, but the main thing I'm working on is this, I would describe it as like a post-apocalyptic cosmic horror hiking movie. And it's called Outside.
Okay.
Outside being like a very important theme for me. I mean, one of Cal's main lines is there's no outside, right?
Yeah.
And so the whole premise is I got two kind of main ideas that informed me writing this that were like the exigence that popped into my head when I started writing this. The first is that basically every outdoorsy person I know says that when the world ends, they'll just go out into nature. Right. Which I think is problematic. I don't know. I'm an outdoorsy person. I don't know how to survive out there. Like, I would die for sure. But, you know, it's interesting that our narrative fictions, about the apocalypse are so centered around the city, right? That's like such a fascinating thing, even though the city is still, you know, even in the 21st century, it's still such a small part of the world, right? So this like the urbanity of our lives has really infected our ability to how we imagine the end of the world. The other thing that really interests me is that when you watch post-apocalyptic fiction or movies, the color tends to be all drained out of it, right? The road. And the kind of implicit claim there is that it's civilization that brings all the color to our life. And I just don't think that's exactly right. So my goal is to make an outdoor-focused, beautiful landscape, cosmic horror, apocalypse movie about the kind of the human core of apocalypse as a concept, not really as like an event.
Okay.
Interesting.
I don't know if that tells you fuck all, but...
enough. It definitely tells enough, which is great. Yeah.
It tells me enough that when it's ready to go, I'll want to watch it. That's right. What it tells me. I love a post-apocalyptic stuff. I mean, you know, big Walking Dead fan and you know. Until the end.
I got a question for you guys.
Yes, sir.
How come, with the exception of comedies, how come in zombie movies they never know what zombies are? Why is it they always have to discover? Do they live in a world where there was never any zombie movies?
That's a good point.
Well, you never know which kind of zombie you're going to get.
Yeah, but they're all zombies, and they all die the same.
Yeah. Oh, you mean like you gotta kill their brain?
Yeah.
No, I've thought of that myself. I'm like, yeah, you gotta stop shooting them in the arm or in the chest.
Yeah, haven't they seen Night of the Living Dead?
In the real world, we'd figure that shit out in like half a second. But I mean, I don't know. I guess that's not why
I still wouldn't survive more than about two half a seconds, though. Yeah. I'd just push him in front of the first zombie and then I'd get the second one. But I'd live longer than you.
I mean, I would outrun him.
No. Mustard's a day, Matthew's man.
I'd outrun you. So, which first thing that came to my mind as you were mentioning outdoors and then cow and just the, you know, everything you know about. Are all your stories going to be in the same universe, like intertwine a little bit? Not that they know each other, but maybe mention these people that were in the van, something like that, or no?
No, I don't think of them as being like in a singular universe. They are all like, I am kind of like a one trick pony when it comes to themes. I'm interested in violence for whatever reason.
Perfect.
I don't know why. I'm interested in maybe more accurately, like the human capacity for violence, which I think is a really interesting thing. I'm interested in environmental issues, and I'm interested in social issues. And this manifests, like, I can tell you a little bit about the other screenplays I'm working on. One of them is an eco-thriller where environmental terrorists jump into a billionaire, like Elon Musk-style character's house to try to scare him straight, and he ends up, like, hunting them to death. right, so it's like Die Hard, but the reversal.
Talk about your ultimate backfire.
Nice.
I'm also working on like a kind of classic style sleepaway camp slasher, but it's an evangelical sleepaway camp, like the ones that I went to when I was a kid, and it's called Thoughts and Prayers because I think that's like the title. So.
I feel like the slasher in that movie is the least scary thing.
I mean, you may have hit on the whole point of the story.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, I'm interested in the stories we tell ourselves, the stories that permeate like how we view the world, like how we think of apocalypse, right? And I like to play with those. I like genre, I like plot. I'm not really into artsy films. I don't really have a lot of patience for drama these days. I want things to go boom and heads to get caved in. I don't know why. But if I can use those genre conventions to think through some of these, I don't know, the interesting times we live in, that's the ideal place for me as a storyteller.
Yeah.
You know,
everything is a common theme and everybody, it's been done 100 times, each one of the subjects you talked about. How can that you bring something different to
right.
it?
Right.
Yes. That's exactly
and you're thinking, lack of a better word, outside the box of these typical things. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Why do you feel you think that way? What gave you that motivation to think that way as you grew up?
You know, man, I think I've been in the process of rethinking. I'm turning 40, right? So like I got a lot of thinking going on in my brain. I'm getting like preemptively reflective about my whole fucking life. It's exhausting. I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was raised in an evangelical household, right? Where like I would go to summer camp and people spoke in tongues and all sorts of stuff. I was an evangelical Christian into my 20s, personally.
Okay.
And that tells you a very specific story about the world, about your place in the world, right?
Right.
At the same time, I was going to school. I was going to science class. I was super into dinosaurs. My parents bought me like the Encyclopedia Britannica. I would love anything about space, you know? And so that tells you another version of the story about your relation to the world, right? And neither of them ever quite made full sense to me. And they seem to never want to touch each other. My favorite example of this is my aunt. I had like this dinosaur book, and my aunt walked up to me one Christmas. I was like 8 years old, and she goes, you know, Noah's flood is where the dinosaurs died. And I was like, I don't know, Aunt Maggie. I think this book says it was a comet. And so like these competing narratives were a part of my life, right? And then I read Lord of the Flies. I mentioned Lord of the Flies earlier. I read Lord of the Flies in fourth grade, and that shit just blew my fucking mind. Yeah. And it made no sense. It didn't try to make sense. It wasn't giving an answer. All it was doing was, I mean, what is it that Dune says about it? The universe isn't a question to be answered, but a mystery to be experienced. That's what reading that book was like at 9 years old, right? That's kind of
cliche,
but I'm a bit of a psychedelic at heart, a psychonaut at heart. And so it suddenly struck me that, you know, if the idea of truth, it gets really wishy-washy, but what really is going on in my life, and I could see this at such a young age, is all these stories I was telling myself and people were telling me and how they kind of changed the lens at which you look at the world, you know? And the fictions that I grew up reading, the things that I really appreciate, the things that I really like now, you know, they want to tell a good story. They want to be entertaining. That's goal number one. Right. But they also want to kind of pick, for me at least, they want to pick at these narratives that permeate our whole vision of the world. And they want to just pull them back a little bit, maybe not completely dismantle them, because that just, we've all had that mushroom trip and that's no fun, but just get you to think about it a little bit, you know? Yeah.
I haven't yet. So,
but one of the interesting things about being raised religious, even though I'm not religious, is it kind of forces you to think of the world in symbols and meanings. Everything has a meaning. Everything has God's purpose, right? I don't really think that way anymore, much to my parents' dismay, but I still, you know, that sense of searching for meaning, just like, I think it never left me, but it just got replaced with stories.
Yeah, for sure. Now, have your parents seen Cow? And if so, what do they think?
They have seen Cow, and I think they think I'm crazy. Yeah. I mean, I think...
Well, did that cap off? Mom, Dad, I'm living outside for 5 years. I mean,
the bar was already pretty low, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, they saw me and they saw all the short films I made when I was in my 20s. They were going to pay for me to go to film school when I was 19 or 20. I worked at ABC for like all of 4 months before I just left. I hated it so much.
Yeah.
So I knew that this was an old thing of mine. And so I think when they saw a cow, I can't imagine what it must be like in their brains. They were impressed at how much better it was than the old stuff than it was.
Sure.
I think it looks pretty damn good given
it does.
It does. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right?
And I think they were impressed with the storytelling. And I think they're also weirded out by my fascination with these themes and things like that. Right.
Sure.
So I think it's kind of the same thing. Like when my dad was helping me build my van, I've never said this to my dad. So if he listens to this, when my dad was helping me build, I could see this kind of double thing going on in his head where he's like, what the fuck is my 30-year-old son doing? And at the same time, he was like proud that I was taking this kind of extreme step because there was something I wanted so much, right? My dad moved from Argentina to the United States when he was 17. Mm. And he moved in with a brother, but they didn't get along. So he was on his own at 18 in a new country, not speaking English, a sixth grade education.
Wow.
You know, so I think he valued my independence and at the same time had trouble understanding. And I think they must feel similarly about some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Or that he was like, boy, I wish I was just saying fuck it and living in a van, you know.
Maybe. I mean, they've always been very supportive. Even when they tell me they think I'm crazy, even when they tell me I'm wrong
right.
about my politics or whatever. We argue about politics all the time. It's awesome. it always ends with my dad telling me I'm young and dumb, which I'm not that young anymore, Dad.
right.
And reminding him that he's not a citizen and can't vote. So.
Wait.
Boom.
Careful saying that out loud these days. Jesus Christ.
I know.
Oh. Yeah. His dad lives.
No.
Way. I was going to say the opposite end of the state. I don't know where he. I'm like, I'm a, I would pick something and it had been right or something.
You're right.
So I stopped, but
his address is right here.
Well, I mean, that's great that they've been supportive, right? I mean, yeah, that's the greatest takeaway from that whole story is that they are supportive of it. And you can still argue about politics, but you're still talking to each other. So that is really where we should be in this world.
Yeah. I mean, we're white people. So my dad's first generation Argentinian. His dad's from Ukraine. But we're also like culturally Latino, basically, right? And you know, nothing breaks the family in our family. If I murdered somebody, you know, we would have a conversation, but there'd be a conversation before they turned me in, you know? So it's like, you got to go pretty far. And I've pushed that a little bit in my lifetime. I've stressed my parents out quite a lot, but they're great. They're great. They're great people. I love them to death.
So you mentioned making films when you were younger. Mm-hmm. Are they still lagging around somewhere? Do you have them still?
Hell no. 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 No.
Why is that?
Well, because they're awful.
Nobody, I assume they were.
Look,
sorry.
Man, hey, the first 10 episodes of this podcast still exist, and they are awful. Yeah.
Look, they're out for everyone to see.
I am forever grateful that I didn't grow up in a time where my adolescence is pasted all over the internet. Like, Jesus fucking Christ. That sounds like the worst thing ever.
Yeah. So what did you use? Did you use a 16mm camera? Or
we were using mini DV cameras back then, right? So this was like just around the digital revolution. 28 days later was shot on a mini DV cam, which is like cool, but they also cheated because they still had $10 million worth of lights or whatever. and all that type of stuff. But yeah, we didn't have any sound equipment. It was just me and my friends shooting stuff. I even sold a short for like $500 to some straight to DVD company called Scream Kings in New Jersey. And it like that physical media probably exists somewhere.
What's it called?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know the company was called Scream Kings. The short was just called The Kill 8 because I had this series of videos called The Kill, which were like 2 to 3 minute. They were basically chances for me to play around with special effects and practice directing and practice cinematography more. No, I do wish I still had them, but I went through a period a Luddite period in my mid-20s where I just like scrubbed the internet and got rid of a bunch of stuff. I didn't go to the movies anymore. That was when I stopped writing, and stopped doing any of my creative work. There was kind of a period of time where I was spending a little bit more time, staring at walls and taking mushrooms, I guess.
Yeah, you tend to stare at walls when you take mushrooms sometimes.
So
why is that wall moving? What's happening?
That's always interesting to me that you say that, because people take mushrooms and you would think they come out of it going, now I'm going to be really creative, or that got the creative juices going. They didn't for you?
Got to set your intentions. If you want to be creative, you can be creative. But if you're not in a creative mood, they're not going to help you be more creative.
Well, and my interest, you know, and again, I always talk so much about being raised religious, but it was like it's more than half my life still, right? My interest in, you know, when I lost my faith, I lost my entire understanding of the world around me, everything. You know what I mean? I never dated a girl outside of Christianity until I wasn't a Christian. I never had friends outside of Christianity until I wasn't a Christian. So my whole world exploded. And so when I was taking mushrooms, what I wanted was to try to figure out the fuck I was looking at every day again. You know what I mean? And like, you know, like classic stoner kid vibes. Of course, I had beaded bracelets and all this shit. I went to India. I actually came back from India like pretty devoid, like extremely atheist quite suddenly when I came back from India. So, you know, what was interesting to me was like what happened with mushrooms was my interest in writing stories and my interest in making movies had always been an interest in doing those as a career, which is not a real thing in my opinion, right? Like when I started doing mushrooms, I started to really take the world around me and the world of people a lot less seriously. And one of the victims of that was my desire to make things for other people.
You know?
It wasn't until I kind of started teaching, I went back to school and I started teaching, that I started to realize that engaging with the world is the right way to respond to these types of things. And then now I'm like kind of on the opposite end of it, where I want to make things. I want to share it with people. It's kind of a long arc.
But you're making things for you and
primarily
wanting people to enjoy them. Like,
yeah, sharing.
And that's why I don't really have any ambitions in terms of career with this stuff. I'm a teacher. I've been a teacher almost 10 years. I love teaching more than anything. And I don't really ever plan on stopping that. I'm going to continue to make things. And if by some accident it gets to the point where I'm spending more time than doing that than I am teaching, well, I'm going to have to really think about that.
Yeah.
That's okay. Not my intention. And in some ways I feel lucky that that's not my intention, because I just get to do it for the fun of it. I don't have any of the anxiety about what people think and stuff, you know? I don't have that's to worry awesome. About sales and shit.
Yeah.
Right. And then you could be more free. And when people say, I'll give you the money if you change this, you can say, fuck you. I'm going to do it my way.
I mean, depending on the amount of money, you know.
Now we get it.
Amen to that.
I'm gonna be 40, okay? Like, I haven't had a full time job since I was 20. I gotta make some money eventually.
We've done ad reads for sex toys, so we are sellouts.
You're doing the Lord's work on that one. I see no problem.
We are. Yeah, making people smile.
If somebody will send a check, I will read your ad read. I do not care what it's for at this point.
I know you. I was giving him a little more credit than you.
Look, I'm an idealist by nature, but also I want to make a movie one day. One of my goals with Cal, I want to make a feature-length film one day. I don't care if it's good. I don't care if it's successful. I just want to do a good job by my own standards, and I want to make one. I don't care if it ends up in theaters. I don't give a shit about any of that. I want the experience. And what I've realized is that's going to require me to convince people to give me some money. And that might mean that I have to compromise a little bit. And given the state of the world and how little compromise there is, I think I've been wrong about most everything in my life. So I figure I can compromise a little bit.
Well, I think it's fun. I know we had Bryn Damai on, and she has a feature length coming out soon. It's called Never Return. And we took part in her, I think it was an Indiegogo. And I think that's fun to be able to be like just a tiny little part of like art that you enjoy, that you like. I don't have these skills to make these kind of things, but to know that I was able to help somebody who does, it's a fun thing. And now I know, like in that movie, somebody's going to be wearing a Cocktails with Dimples in the Beard shirt. And I'm like, that's fucking awesome.
That's cool.
You know, I struggled with the Indiegogo a lot. That was the first time I'd ever done that, you know? And I just like struggled with the idea of asking people for money. I have what has been called the negative money mindset.
Okay.
For sure. That one, I live with that one close to my heart, because I wear that like a badge. And so I just struggled. But what I realized was that people kind of took it the way that you're expressing, right? People were excited about my friends were excited about the opportunity to be involved, to support me, to show that support in like a real way, you know? It'll be much easier on the next one, I think.
Right, the more you do it. But he's right. Yeah, I mean, this is, if you love it and you respect that person and you like their vision, hell yeah, why wouldn't we help you out?
Yeah,
it's a cool thing. It really is.
So someday maybe we'll see one of our t-shirts in your movie.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we can make that happen for sure.
You're such a sellout.
I know.
Cal, they were all wearing actual climbing branded gear. With climbing brands that I had connections to at the time, right? And I tried to be as subtle as possible, but this was a way for me to get them to share it on their social medias and all this type of stuff, right?
Absolutely.
And, you got it.
We had a big conversation, my cinematographer and I, about whether or not they should have branding on them, because the general convention is you don't do it, right?
Right.
But climbers are, I don't know, if you go watch some climbing media, we're extremely branded people. We're like the most material branded people on the planet. You never, if you had two climbers with no climbing brands on their chest, I would not trust the narrative at all, because it's just so far from reality.
Okay.
So it was really important to me to have these brands on them. Except at the end when we were tearing their shirts up and stuff and coming so yeah, it's kind of funny the way that works out. But I thought it was super fun.
Well, you're right. And it's the world we live in now with trying to promote everything via social media. Anybody that you can get to share it for you and put it up is a good thing, right? Yeah, so,
I mean, you know, one of the main Indiegogo supporters, one of the Michael Sabatini, who shows up in there, the executive producers, he donated a large amount of money. I had never met him before. He found it because a pro climber shared the Indiegogo on his Instagram, a pro climber I've run into a few times, who was just nice enough to do it because they wanted to see somebody making stuff. That made a connection there. So, you know, social media may lead to the end of the world, but also there's these kind of beautiful moments of connection that happen.
Right.
Might as well use it to your advantage along the way, right?
Yeah. I don't know what the answer is here.
Well, we keep talking about climbing, and my nephew, a couple of years ago, probably more than I expect, huge climber. He found it kind of the same thing. He was didn't go to school. He quit school. He was smoking a lot of pot. Yeah, and now he's climbing, and he just loves it. And he actually works for moved back from Minnesota, and he works for climbing, you know, indoor climbing. And he goes around designing the, what do you call it? The track.
Yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
you're out
route.
There.
He's
so
he's a route setter.
Route setter. Thank you very much. Sorry, Liam. I should have known that. You tell me. So he tells me about it at Christmas time. So yeah.
Every year. He
loves it.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I got a job in a climbing gym 4 months after I started climbing. I worked for, I think, close to 10 years as a climbing instructor/guide. I worked primarily with children, 4 to 12 years old.
Okay, cool.
And even while I was, you know, kind of transitioning to teaching, I spent 4 summers out in Durango running a climbing camp out there in Colorado. And yeah, I loved the work, but it got to be too much climbing for me. But it's funny. It seems like your nephew's having a similar experience where it kind of like gives you a reason to come back into the fold a little bit, which for me was a good thing.
Yeah, he just loves it. And I just love listening to him tell me about his latest adventure, you know, climbing this. And he watching him get so excited about it,
yeah,
you know, is what's really cool.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long you can do that. I mean, there's a point where you just can't climb anymore, right? Because of
So one of the beauties about climbing is that it has these different types of climbing. The type of climbing I do is called bouldering. Your nephew will know this. It's like a very physical form of climbing, and it's definitely a young person sport. Like I'm getting up there. I'm like an older boulderer at this point. I'm almost always the oldest person at the boulders when I'm climbing with people. But there are these other forms of climbing that are less about the physical difficulty and more about just getting out in the mountains. And those people do those into their 70s.
Okay.
And so like, that's one of the things that I'm really excited about with climbing. I played soccer when I was young until I was about 18. And that one has such a short lifespan in a lot of ways. Right. Mm-hmm. But this whole climbing thing I get to chase this down all the way until I croak basically, which is pretty dope.
Dude, I'm 52 years old and I can barely climb the stairs.
Well, it's definitely like I think what I've learned from the older climbers I know is if you don't use it, you lose it, right? They got to keep on moving all the fucking time.
Good for them. Have you ever had any close calls? Like, were you?
I've broken my heel in a gym. I've broken my pinky outside. You can kind of tell. I don't know if you can tell. It's like still kind of crooked.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
I needed surgery, but this was before the Affordable Care Act, and so I just had a friend who was an orthotech like break it for me in his kitchen, and try to reset it. And I think that is going to be a problem when I'm 70. But that's a future problem.
You're probably gonna have a little bit of arthritis up in that bad boy.
Yeah,
I don't know if you're a football guy at all, but we're in Wisconsin, and we have a former Packer. His name is Larry McCarron. And he has a finger that sticks out straight.
Kind of like yours, yeah.
But yeah, I went running past him on a trail one time, and he was on the other side of the trail, and he still poked me. That's how far that thing sticks out. That was back in my days when I still ran.
Those 2 weeks. So bouldering, right? Isn't that where you're not really so much high in the air, but you're trying to do like on an angle or almost... I don't know. You could explain more than me.
You keep trying to explain it. This is awesome.
I'm trying to think of the word. Elevate? No, that's what's stuck in my brain. But he was telling me about, he does that because he talks about the mattresses you got to lay down. And I'm like, you bring mattresses with you? What are you talking about?
So the crash pads. Yeah. Yeah. One of the most fun things is when you're on like a lot of bouldering areas are in kind of normal nature areas. So you come across hikers all the time and some of them will be brave enough to ask you what the thing on your back is, the crash pad. So I always go with either my laptop case, so it's like 4 feet by 6 feet, or erotic massage table. That one's fun too. To try to avoid that one when the kids around. But no, both the bouldering is not about the height. So oftentimes,
my laptop case.
No, I like laptop case. I rarely get laughed for that one.
It's like the giant phone joke. Sorry, go on.
That's good. No, that's good.
I appreciate the laugh because I feel like my wife doesn't think that one's funny.
Girls never find that kind of humor funny. I don't get it.
I'm faxing my dad jokes. But Yeah, it's about the difficulty, not about the height. But I mean, right. Boulder, you'll do things that are high. You know, I've done some, like, we call them high balls, and so there's risk involved there. I blew my knee out this summer on a high ball, and so there is some risk there involved. But it's less risky than, say, you know, if something goes wrong when you're rope climbing several hundred feet up, then you have real problems. And I used to do that type of climbing a lot. I never had any real close calls. I wasn't that good at the beginning, but when I became a guide, I got better and learned more.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I've become really attached to the physical part of it, and I really enjoy that part of it. But as I get older, I'm going to go back to the mountain parts, because I do kind of miss the mountains. I do kind of miss spending time in the mountains. I think the tallest thing I've ever climbed is like 1,000 feet. I slept on a ledge once, but that wasn't because I had to. It was for my birthday. We just like climbed 400 feet up, slept on a ledge, tied in, and got drunk, and then went back down the next morning. And so,
nope.
But I think bouldering is kind of the most common form of climbing now. It's the way that most people get involved in climbing these days, because it's a little more accessible. There's less gear to know about, and like, there's less to fuck up, right? If you are going out climbing on a rope with somebody, you're responsible for their lives, right?
Yeah. Well, you just answered a question, not a question, but when I was watching Kyle, I heard at the beginning, Sam saying, watch highballs, and then about, you have too many beers. And I'm thinking, what, she thinks he's an alcoholic? Because I'm thinking highball is like a highball drink.
that's a good point. I think I thought the same thing.
That's funny. Yeah, you know.
And then, go ahead. Well,
it was interesting because my, you know, one of the other things, one of the reasons I decided to write this kind of van life climbing thing was because I have, you know, most of my Instagram, my social media following, that I don't really cultivate it, but it's all climbers, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, I wanted to write something that I knew well, something that I could, but then it was always a balance to try to find, you know, talking to the climbers versus talking to the non-climbers. And this is why we didn't show any actual climbing. Number one, it would have limited who could actually be in the film. Like Emma works at the climbing gym, Emma Coonrad, who plays Sam, who did an incredible job. She works at the climbing gym, but she's also an actress. She went to school for acting. I didn't know that. So she went through the audition process like normal. But Daniel's not a climber, although he has quite the climber physique, right? The problem with filming climbing is that if you film it for the non-climbers, you're going to lose the climbers because it's going to look ridiculous. And if you film it for the climbers, it's going to look boring to the non-climbers. So we decided to just avoid that entirely by not really engaging with it.
Well, you know, so I'm thinking, where does she think he's going? You know, he's out at the park. He's not going to the bar. I'm like, okay, whatever. Now I get it. I'm with you now.
Wait, what's the Sylvester Stallone movie that's like a
cliffhanger?
Now, is that terrible? Is that, if you're a climber, is that thing you watch that and go, nah?
Okay, look. I love bad climbing in movies. There's nothing better than the first scene in Mission Impossible 2, where he's like doing downward dinos and iron crosses while he's like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. Or the first scene of Vertical Limit.
But it's Tom Cruise. He can do everything.
Yes, he can do anything. And it's John Woo, and it looks amazing.
It does look good.
Or the first scene in Vertical Limit, where somehow the bolts explode, like exploding golf balls. The steel bolts don't explode. That just doesn't happen. And then they somehow all end up on the same rope, which would really, I don't think, ever happen on one single cam. And there would have been so many more options before he had to cut the rope to save his sister. So, but Sylvester Stallone, the interesting thing with Cliffhanger, like that intro scene where he's free soloing up over this huge arc, that's an insane thing to do. And there's no way in hell that was the easiest way to go up that thing. But that was Wolfgang Gulick, who was an extremely famous climber at the time, who died really young in a car accident. He was his generation's best climber. So he had a rope on, but he was doing all that stuff. That is fully within the capabilities, you know?
Sure.
The bolt gun where they just like shoot a bolt at a distance and it puts it in there, that doesn't exist. I wish it did.
That doesn't, okay.
All I know is Rambo does not take the easy way. Rambo takes the hard way.
No, and it wouldn't be
the ultimate climbing scene is in Ace Ventura 2 when he's climbing across and he loses the raccoon.
Raccoon, yes. Man, I was a huge Ace Ventura fan when I was a kid, and I'm not sure that it's going to feel the same watching it as an adult. I don't know. I worry a little bit.
Don't worry. throw it in, you'll laugh just as hard. I love it. I love it.
Amazing. And,
yeah. I think it's safe to say I've never seen Ace Ventura 2. Ace Ventura 1, yes. I'm
you
pretty
would remember
sure
that.
I missed the sequel.
Well, you they remember off. The rhino scene. The rhino and scene lives in my head forever.
You don't get that out of your vision.
No. I close my eyes at night, and that's what I see.
Luckily, that one's been so memed that I know what you're talking about.
Right. And I showed that that movie to my daughters when they were too young. They should not have seen it at the time. So,
yeah, I mean,
but they
I
still love it.
I feel like that's like a classic thing if you have kids. I don't have any kids, but I grew up around a lot of kids. Is you remember something that you loved as a kid, like RoboCop. Yeah. And then you show it to these and you're like, oh shit, like this is not a fucking kid. Oh, fuck.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you watch it again and you go, oh, this isn't good.
Yeah.
Like I loved it as a kid, but this is that like, one... I love Friday the 13th. When I watch the first Friday the 13th, I just laugh now. Like it's just funny.
It's amazing that the movie did what it did.
But I've done that with my kids probably 300 times where I showed it to them when they shouldn't have seen it too early. Oh, yeah, well,
I mean, you turned out okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember taking my daughter to the Barbie movie when it was in the theaters because I didn't realize it was PG-13. I thought it was just PG. And I think she was 8. And the first scene is all about blowjobs. Like the whole first song is basically about blowjobs. I'm like, oh, I didn't. I mean, she didn't get it. She has no idea. But
that's what we do.
I remember my dad, I must have been 12 or 13, and my dad took me and my brother. So if I was 12, my brother would have been like 7 to see Starship Troopers. That was an extremely awkward experience.
There you go.
Which,
one of the greatest movies ever. I love that movie. I think Paul Verhoeven was the best.
For a kid, that's a good movie. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I remember... So many
and
boobs.
There's nudity, so you got that.
I remember being so like just not like refusing to look at my dad at all, like just so nervous about it.
So you did mention you do like sci-fi, so that I would imagine that's added cost to any movie that you'd want to write, unless you do it inside of a spaceship the whole time or something. But if any of your stories in outer space,
except for an elevator. Yeah, so I mean, the elevator story is a short story I've published. It's like on Bangladesh Review or something.
Okay.
It's available online. I can send you guys a link.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I've also self-published 3 sci-fi novels.
Oh, wow. Shit.
They're over here that people can read if they so desire. These are
pretty
old now.
Where are they available?
Mention the names.
They're on Amazon. They're The Void Within, The Void Beyond, and The Terror of the Void. I'll send you guys a link as well. And they're more Star Trek than Star Wars. That's the warning. They're more Star Trek than Star Wars. I'm a Star Trek fan.
Are they connected? Is it a trilogy?
Yeah, it's a trilogy. It's a trilogy, yeah. And I think the second one is the best one, just in case anybody's worried about the first one.
A lot of trilogies are.
So yeah, I think a lot in terms of sci-fi, in terms of fiction, in terms of writing movies, I tend more towards thrillers and horror. And I think that partially has to do with just like a lot of these films that I'm writing, I want to make one day myself, right? And you want to limit the needs there. And sci-fi is just always going to be a huge budget in a lot of ways, right? It's always going to be a huge production. But you know, when you're writing a fiction, you can just have your entire imagination. Like, these are space operas, so they cover planets and there's massive space battles and like a trillion people die in one of them or something. So it's just like insane. You can have so much fun.
No limits.
Yeah. But I kind of run around all over the place. I have like, I just don't do, I used to do a lot of more dramatic stuff. I don't do any of that stuff anymore. I've written a few like kind of comedic short films and things like that. But I'm still, I think because I'm just now getting back into writing really quite a lot now creatively. I wrote these when I was in the van and then took a long break from writing. I'm still rediscovering my voice and rediscovering my interests and rediscovering my genre, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Would you write horror? Like, you know, as a novel type thing?
I've been thinking about that recently after reading Jarrett's most recent book. And
good stories in there.
Yeah. And I wrote for his class, I wrote kind of like a horror oriented superhero story.
Oh, okay.
And it was so much fun. It was so much fun to get out there with it. So I do kind of want to do that. And I love Stephen Graham Jones. I do some of my scholarship is on Stephen Graham Jones.
Okay.
So I love his type of horror, which is also like quite smart and thematic. And so, yeah, I think I got a lot of plans for when I finish school. I just got to graduate first.
Then you can do it all.
And then nice. And then maybe presumably I'll have time to chase some of these things down. But yeah, it's super fun.
Nice.
We'll just kind of top it off with this with Jared. When you were in his class, and did he bring in his stories for the class to read? Did he ever let you read his class?
He did not. No, not in that class at least. And I think this class, I can't remember if this class was before Hammer of the Dogs. Is that right?
Yeah.
I can't remember if that was before or after this class, but he brought one of the things that he did that was really interesting is he brought people from the community who are creators. So he brought filmmakers and comic books and horror writers from the community to talk about what they do in the world, right? He wanted his class to really engage with the broader community in Las Vegas, which has a really thriving art scene. I did not know this when I moved here. I just thought it was a place you go to get fucked up. And that was the whole thing, right? And so, he didn't make us read any of it. I don't know how people would respond to that if he like assigned his own books as a part of the syllabus.
Let me rephrase that. I'm more like, if anybody wants to read this, I'm looking for an opinion or something. I would have done something like that, but
I was hoping you were going to ask for some embarrassing stories, like anytime
how about her?
Look, Jared walks around with a hat that says Florida Man and has like a Sasquatch. I think it's the skunk ape or something.
What's that thing called? That's that. The skunk ape.
The skunk ape.
Yeah.
He was wearing that at school today when I was born. And I love that hat. I love that hat. It's so good.
Nice.
No, but his class was great. And we got to read, got to read a bunch of comics I'd read in the past, but taken from a little bit more serious angle. You know, Frank Miller's The Dark Knight. Is it Rises, Strikes Again, 86, that one? Just an absolute masterpiece. And then it was cool to meet all these people. And then also he's quite an easygoing professor. Like, he wants you to do the work, but also he'll work with you. He's there to help. And I don't really know of any professor in our department who champions student work as much as he does.
Yeah.
His whole thing is, getting people published, getting people out there. Yeah. He was already asking me today when my Indiegogo is going to go for outside so he can contribute. So he's just like very, really wants to help others while he's, clearly crushing it in his own writing career.
Right,
for sure. And you couldn't be more right about that. Like I said, obviously he's the one who turned us on to you,
right?
And we couldn't thank him more because we got to see your short and before anybody else got to see it, I might add.
Hey.
We're special and it's fantastic. I just want to, before we go, I do want to how good it is for a low budget, because I watched a lot of shorts, low budget shorts, and they don't always look the best. Your low budget, small budget short looks like it could be a feature film. It's very well done.
Thanks.
It's very well acted, and it's a nice watch. So,
thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it comes out soon for the masses. So,
yeah. I have to figure out when like the last one of these film festivals that has like a no whatever privilege thing on it. I could probably figure that out, and it might be sooner than later, but I'll let you guys know when it does.
Honestly, we will definitely promote.
I just can't make it public, so if any of your listeners really want to see it, they can just message me on Instagram and I will send them a link.
Okay.
I'm perfectly fine with that. I just can't make it publicly available, but one-to-one like that's no big deal, and I than happy to share. And I'm surprised, number one, that anybody wants to watch it, and then even more surprised that anybody likes it at all. Quite a pleasure.
Yeah.
Well, then tell everybody the best place to contact you to get that link.
So the easiest way to get a hold of me is on Instagram. I've sold my soul to Instagram algorithm. So my Instagram is at Boulder Bushido, BoulderBushido, because like all young white men who grew up in California, I wanted to be a samurai until I was approximately last year. And so, it's mostly climbing stuff, but it's also art stuff nowadays. It's mostly still climbing stuff, but shoot me a message there and I will happily send you a link.
I can't believe you saved the fact that you wanted to be a samurai until the last 2 seconds of this.
Right.
We would have definitely talked more samurais.
Damn it.
But no,
That's next time for his next movie. We'll talk about Sam Raimi.
Yeah, say when
you're going to be like, how do you think of the movie? I don't care about your movie. Let's talk samurais.
Yeah, this was a great conversation. When the next one is ready to go and you're ready to promote at all, hit us up. We'd love to do it again. So
I'll let you guys know. Yeah, we're in pre-production. We're going to shoot in January and then again in April or March, April. We need to get some snow stuff. And so once we shoot in January, I should have a trailer.
Cool.
Okay.
And I'm in the middle of casting right now, and we've already got one part casted by somebody who's just absolutely excellent. Really, really excited. And yeah, this one will be fun. This one will be very different in tonally and all that type of stuff. But hopefully, I think it'll be better is the main goal, right? Is to improve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time, right? Yeah. A little bit better each one. Awesome.
I don't want to forget to mention that when I was out in Vegas a little while ago, and Jared gave me the name of a couple of dive bars to go to. So thank you. So he doubled down. Saloon, he gave me one, and I forget the other, but he gave me a bunch of dive bars to go to. Yeah. So thanks, Jared.
I like Starboard Tack. That's like the one that the English department frequents, and they're like in a neighborhood. Oh. It's weird. I don't know why. And it's ship themed, and it's extra weird, and it's awesome.
I think that was closed. We went there and it was closed. It wasn't open yet. It was open later. Yes. Yes.
Brutal.
We were looking forward to that one.
Yeah. So. That one's a fun one. I'm not like the heaviest drinker on the planet these days, but I do like that place.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. This has been fun.
Thank you guys so much. Appreciate y'all. And I'll send you links to stuff here a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. We'll put them in the description. Let people find them that way.
Perfect. So. Perfect. Well, appreciate y'all. Love what you guys are doing. And again, thank you so much for taking the time to watch and have a conversation with me about my weird short film about a killer cow.
He wrapped it up right there. I love it.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. All right.
Night-night. Bye, you guys.
Thank you for listening. The tavern is closed for now, but we'd love to have you back for more fun next time. Seriously, though, get your asses out of here.
Okay, real talk. How many pictures are on your camera roll right now? Enough to induce a little stress? Let's take a deep breath. Friend to friend, I want to tell you what finally worked for me. Chatbooks. They make it so easy to actually do something with all those photos. And right now, they're giving us a podcast exclusive mind-blowing offer. 12 monthly mini photo books for just $12, plus free shipping. That's a full year of printed memories for less than you pay for 1 month of streaming. Sleep better at night knowing your memories are safe. Just pick your photos and the Chatbooks app does the rest. Go to chatbooks.com/get12. That's chatbooks.com/get12 and grab this deal before it's gone.